We do Ahavat Chesed, that's we learn Chafetz Chaim's work on the laws of between men and his fellow men. And at the end of last semester, we're holding at the end of the 10th chapter. So I think we'll make a run for it today. We'll finish the 10th chapter, so next week we could start fresh with a new topic, the 11th chapter, which is really a whole new section in the book. We left off discussing the obligation to pay wages on time. And the Chafetz Chaim had taught us that if a person owes wages to two workers and they're both equally poor or not poor, and one is his relative, even though technically when it comes to charity, we're supposed to give charity to our relative first, but when it comes to paying wages, a relative has no precedence. You owe them both, that doesn't factor in the fact that one's your relative. For charity, for acts of kindness, there you're supposed to think of your relative first. But when you owe money to workers who work for you, there you owe them both to pay them on time, and if you're stuck, so then the relative has no right to precedence. And now we're up to the 10th chapter, the 10th halacha. V'dan, I want you to know, d'madam linan d'anikel dem, and what we said earlier, that if you owe two workers wages and you only have enough to pay one of them, the poor worker comes first. That's even if the wealthy worker shows up 5 minutes before the poor worker. He comes in and says, hey, pay me for the day's work. Being that you know that the poor worker is going to come in for sure. You know he's going to come. He worked, he painted your house today. He expects to get paid today. Your stockbroker comes in and says, you know, I sold your stocks today. Pay me my dividend. So your stockbroker, he's a millionaire. The guy who painted your house, he needs the food, the money to feed his family. He didn't show up yet to ask for his wages, but you know he's going to come today. So he has precedence even if he hasn't walked in yet. Like we say, you could rest assured that someone who did work isn't going to leave over the pay and say, okay, pay me tomorrow. He's going to show up today and ask for pay. Yeah?
Now, is this in a case where you might not have enough money?
We're talking about where he won't have enough money if they bought him.
Okay.
That's what we're talking about. Okay. Halacha Yudalef. Im shnei apolim ayu ashrim, if both workers were wealthy or poor, ve'chad mim ayaschir yom tzlo etzmol, ukvar avar azman debaltalim. One of them worked for you yesterday. You have yesterday's babysitter. She watched your kids yesterday. Really, you were supposed to pay her on time. You didn't. You already transgressed. And the other worker painted your house today. Now they both come before you. Now technically, the second worker, if you don't pay him now, you're transgressing a fresh transgression. The old worker, you've already transgressed. So there's a funny halacha here. The halacha said, "Sarich la'akdim nashini." You have to pay the second worker. The worker of today has precedence. Devoy avor hazman, because if you don't pay him, you're transgressing a fresh transgression. And the first worker, even though technically he's going to have to wait longer, but here we have a funny outcome of the halacha, and that is that we say, get the money, put the money together and pay him as soon as you can, but by him you've already transgressed. And it could be that in this instance, where we have a biblical prohibition of delaying wages, and we said, once you've delayed, so you've transgressed, so it could be that in this instance, even a wealthy worker, your stockbroker, might have precedence if he's the one that worked for you today and the babysitter worked yesterday. You cannot hire a worker if you know that you won't have the money to pay him on time. You can't take a painter and then at the end of the job you say, you know, I'll have the money tomorrow, I got to get to an ATM machine. If you hired a worker and you know you won't be able to pay him on time, you're not allowed to hire him. Because you could assume that a worker's working with the understanding you'll pay him on time. As the verse says, the worker is putting his life into his job. It's his livelihood. It's what he wants to feed his family with. The only way you could do it is if you tell him in advance, look, I'll get the money to you, but it'll take me time. If he agrees, that's fine. Or if the custom in that place is that you pay him on market day, that's when people have cash. Like we mentioned in the end of the 9th chapter. And therefore, if you hire a worker and you want to go on a trip, you're not going to be there on time to pay him. צריך להזמין מות עבורו קודם שיישא. You have to set up someone that will pay him when you're gone. כדי שישולמנו בזמנו, so that he ends up being paid on time. כל זה שכתבנו באלו השני פרקים, everything we mentioned about paying workers on time in these two chapters, הוא רק לעניין אם מאחר צחרו ואינו משלם לו בזמנו. That's a discussion of what happens when you delay paying wages. That's one biblical prohibition. אבל אם חובש צחרו לגמרי, but what happens if a person does what people often do, unfortunately? They hire a worker, and then they don't pay him. Especially in the teaching industry. You have this all the time. If you're a tutor, if you're a teacher, sometimes people will hire a teacher and then never pay him. They'll keep pushing him off, but they'll never pay him. But this is true in every industry. I was walking through the mall this week, and a woman, a waitress came around and said, "Did you see this woman? Did you see this woman?" A woman ordered a meal, ate it, got up and left. Never paid. In every industry, you have people who do that. ואין בדעתו לפעול לו, if someone has no intention of paying someone else, ואפילו אם מחסר לו רק פרוטה אחת ממה שמתחייב לו, even if he only owes him one פרוטה, 5 cents, he paid him $99.95, $99.75. עובר עוד על מה שכתוב בתורה, then he is in transgression of the biblical commandment. Beyond the commandment of delaying wages, there's a commandment, לא תעשוק את רעך ולא תגזול. Don't steal your friend's money in a manner of thievery or in a manner of withholding wages. דגמזהו בכלל גזל, this is also included in thievery, as the Gemara tells us, והוא פסול לעדות מן התורה עבור זה. And that person is disqualified from being a witness. No, when is this relevant? When they ask you to be an aide in a chuppah. People sometimes take a... Usually people take their good friends to be witnesses for their wedding. What if your friend doesn't keep Shabbos? He's not a kosher witness. Your whole marriage to your wife is disqualified. What if your friend, he doesn't eat kosher always? He cannot be a witness. Give him a blessing. Give him a different honor, but not the honor of being a witness.
What if the guy getting married is not doesn't keep kosher, doesn't keep Shabbat?
Well, does he want to be legally married to his wife or not? He needs two kosher witnesses.
Bring people.
He needs two kosher witnesses.
Friend of Hillel needs to bring. Go and find.
If he wants to be halachically married to her, I mean, it's funny because the way honors go, there's no logic behind honors, right? Honors is just a question of ego. So, in the world, the way the system works is the greatest honor is to be the one who ordains the wedding. Technically, you don't even need someone ordaining a wedding. The rabbis instituted it just so that there won't be balagan. There'll be a rabbinic authority there to set it up. But really, you could get married without a rabbi.
But
present.
The rabbanut here, anybody could be an ed, right?
Wait, right. I mean, yeah. So, number one, but that's the biggest honor, and really that's a farce, because it's just that he's the one that's overseeing that everything's done right, but really everything could happen without him. So, today we have to have a rabbi there, and it's true, he's the one that's officiating. The next honor is the guy who gets to read the ksuba out loud. Really, you don't have to read the ksuba out loud. There's no such halacha. The only reason we do it is because we want to pause. We made a bor priya gafen. We made one blessing on the wine. We're going to make another blessing on the wine. How do you make two blessings on wine? So we make a pause in the middle. So we get someone up there to read the ksuba. Do you really need to read the ksuba? No. We do it today you need to, but the custom is there just to make a pause. So that's a big honor. He gets to read in front of everyone. That's the next biggest honor. The next honor is reading the blessings. And the final, lowest honor is to be a witness. The truth is, the biggest honor is to be a witness. Because if you're a witness, that you're making the wedding. Without you, there's no wedding. That's why big rabbis in Jerusalem very often used to say, make me a witness. Don't give me the honor of a blessing. Let me be a witness. Everyone considers that the lowest honor. That's what you give to your friends. You don't give to the rabbis. But in truth, that's the biggest honor. That's what really makes the wedding. And here, the Chafetz Chaim is saying, a guy who withholds even a quarter from the wages he owes someone, the babysitter's there, she worked 5 hours, and he says, I'm missing a quarter, you know? It's okay, right? What's she going to say? If she says fine, okay. She said fine. But if she doesn't say anything, you didn't pay her the quarter. That's the biblical transgression of delaying wages and the biblical transgression of withholding wages.
Well,
he has to do tshuva.
Okay.
So the custom is at a wedding, the Sfaradim do this, the Ashkenazim don't. I don't know why. that the one who's ordaining the wedding, just before we begin the actual wedding ceremony, before he puts the ring on the finger, before he makes the blessing, he puts the ring on the finger, the rabbi turns to the witnesses and says, do tshuva. What's he telling them? If you think, I really, really want to do what's right, I want to do tshuva, so the fact that you started the tshuva process already makes you a kosher witness. So long as you really mean it. And usually when people are standing up there, they don't remember the quarter they didn't pay the girl, and they don't remember all their sins, and they just think, you know, I really do want to do what's right. So that's already tshuva, and that's what makes them a kosher witness. Yeah?
So if a person from the outside made it tonight and said, right now I can't pay you, I'll agree to pay you at a later date, if the group agrees to that, would he still be over on the issue of not paying on time, or would that...
So technically, if that's the given, that's fine. What he should do is pay him a shekel. And then what happens is that the rest of the money that he owes becomes a loan. That's the better way of doing it.
I'm kind of curious about the whole not having a kosher wedding. I mean, he goes in for an Ashkenazi wedding, they don't, you know, promise to do tshuva. So what if, like, your friend, you know, he has a great character, but one time, like, years ago, maybe, like, he forgot to do that, or maybe sometime earlier that year, like, after Yom Kippur, he forgot to do something small like that, and, you know, he doesn't remember, you don't know.
We say the average Jew is kosher. Okay. I mean, a kosher Jew, that's the assumption. And we go with that assumption in everything.
But then you're being, you know, the majority, numerically, the majority of marriages then in the Jewish people, you're saying are...
Why? If
it has to be Shomer Kashrut and Shomer Shabbat, then, you know, at least numerically then, you know, the vast majority of marriages then that take place are not...
You think so? You think the witnesses aren't kosher?
Well, nobody has had a chiloni here in America.
It depends on who the officiating rabbi is.
Oh, well, let's take Israel as a dogma. We have a rabbi and stuff, but stay din. People just, you know, bring no one in din.
Usually the rabbi sees that the edim are the way they should be. There are tricks that rabbis do to ensure that everything goes the way it should be. Meaning... Technically,
when I get to marry North Tel Aviv, he has no friends there.
Right.
You know,
so let's imagine like
witnesses.
This. What a rabbi could do is the guy appoints them as his two witnesses, and the rabbi appoints his two witnesses. I mean, there are ways of doing it. We don't interfere technically with what's happening. He feels he honored them, but you know, technically, really, witnesses. There are ways of doing it. We're not going through all the laws of marriage here. There are ways of ensuring that the marriage be the way it should be. There are a lot of things we do at a wedding we don't explain to the people there.
Yeah.
To help them out. A lot of things.
Well, how about this? Then in America, I think, at least if you have the vast majority of like non-religious people there, then you're saying, well, the kids are men, the moms are.
No. Even if it wasn't a kosher wedding, the kids aren't mamzerim. That doesn't make them mamzerim.
Well, you said the marriage is not...
That doesn't make them mamzerim. It means they're living out of wedlock. I mean, but they're not... I'm saying... Even worst case scenario, even if a person took a witness who doesn't keep Shabbat, it's not that his kids are mamzerim. The kids are kosher Jews.
Yeah, you seriously feel that they're not married?
So that there's a lot to discuss. Right. So there's a lot to discuss about how that works. I wouldn't tell them, okay, if you guys want to break up, so you don't need a divorce. I would not say that. We went off on a big tangent on that one. Okay. Well, that's why there's a rabbi officiating the wedding. He does know.
Right. You have an American, a lot of people don't even know.
But there's a big rabbi there. Okay, what can I do? You have people who get only legally married. Okay? Even that.
Okay, well,
they might need a halachic divorce. Sure. We had in our community a conservative rabbi. When he wanted to marry off his daughters, he called the Orthodox rabbi and asked him to initiate the wedding. He didn't know how. He wanted his daughters to be married correctly, halachically, and he didn't know how. The community I grew up in. So the conservative rabbi called the Orthodox rabbi and said, for my daughters, I need you.
Conservative rabbi in honesty.
Yeah. Our sages say, whoever withholds wages, it's like he's taking the person's life. and he transgresses five prohibitions and one positive commandment. The Torah says don't withhold wages, don't steal, don't leave wages overnight, don't, the Torah repeats again, don't withhold wages of the poor, don't let the sun set without paying him, and the biblical prohibition, the biblical commandment, pay him on time, as it says in Parshat Ki Tetzeh. The Gemara over there elaborates on that, the Gemara in Baba Metzia, and the Zohar and Parshas Kedoshim also elaborates on this. Al ken, therefore, Hashomer nafsho yishmor et atzmo mod b'inyan zeh, whoever watches his soul will watch himself very much in this point, v'yeschar ito, and he will get the proper wages for watching this mitzvah and paying on time. And that brings us to the first, to the conclusion of the first section of the book, Avat Chesed. And in Bezrat Hashem, next week we'll begin the second section of the book, in which the Chafetz Chaim really delves into what does it mean, Ahavat Chesed, love of kindness. What should we be developing within ourselves? That's where we'll pick up Bezrat Hashem in Sunday's class.